UCB Ireland. More than just words. More than just music.
Welcome to this edition of Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. And today we're going to meet the team. It's another edition of Meet the Team. And it is my pleasure to have in the studio with me, Michaela Marrett. How are
Woo!
You?
Woo! Yeah! Wah, wah, wah!
How you doing? You all right?
I'm good!
It is good to see you. It is good to see you. And thank you for being part of Meet the Team. Michaela, you've been with us now, what, two and a bit years?
Yeah, two and a bit.
Yeah, that's a lot, isn't it? It's a long time. Long time.
I have a key.
Yeah. Yeah, you do. You have a key. And that's very important. You get a key, that's it. You're in forever now. That's you can't go anywhere. But Michaela, you've been doing the drive show or the homework now for 2.5 years. But there's so much more that you do for UCB Ireland. And we'll talk about that in this hour. We'll talk about your role here, but also many of the things that you do. But it is great to see you. I was thinking about this. You're the youngest member of the staff.
Yes, I am. Yeah. Proudly.
Michaela is our youngest staff member. That does not mean that anyway, other than age, you are a younger staff member.
And that's good to hear because next week I'm 29. So it's nice to have that reminder, you know, to just let that sink in.
Somebody else who's putting a hand up now going, I want to be a member of the staff. I'm only 22. I want to be a member of the staff. So anyway, listen, Let's go right back to the beginning, okay? If we want to find out who Michaela is, let's go right back to the beginning, 29 years ago, and a little bit, maybe 27 years ago when you were a toddler. What was your childhood like?
Yeah, I guess I had a great childhood in many ways. I grew up with my mom. My mom had me through a teenage pregnancy and we were the only Christians in the village. So that was scandalous.
Wow.
And she was only 17 years old. My mom didn't do her junior cert. She didn't do her leaving cert.
Wow.
She dropped out and decided to have me. That was in 1995. She went to the doctor. The doctor told her... Oh, at that time, Magdalene Laundries hadn't closed yet. 1995, the last one closed.
No way.
And she went to the local doctor and was like, I'm pregnant. And he was like, it's okay. And handed her a load of leaflets for, I guess, what you'd call options. And she said, oh, no, I'm planning on keeping it. And he was like, okay. So she was exceptionally brave and decided to have me. Against all odds and criticism and judgment and shame. And I grew up in that. She was with in a relationship with my father, who wasn't a Christian at the time. He was a big shot in football.
Okay.
He was captain of the Loud team.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And they were truly oil and water because you have my mom who is a Christian and lives this other life. And then you have my dad who's on the Late Show and it's football and he's living the high life. And then, of course, alas, arrives me into the middle of it. And I've been causing a storm ever since. Well,
there's nothing quiet about you. Let's put it that way.
Yes, yeah, true. And if you knew both my parents, you'd know that I didn't stand a chance regardless. So I grew up in that. They didn't stay together. They chose to separate when I was about 4 years old. But I was extremely blessed. It's never nice, I think, for anybody to have, you know, parents who are separated. But I have been extremely blessed with the circumstances of it. Both my parents met somebody and got remarried in the same year in 2000.
Wow.
So there was never that kind of a push and pull between, oh, my mom's getting married and now my dad's on his own, or my dad's getting married and now it's my mama on their own, or any of those kind of, I think, usual irregularities that go along with it. It was great. So I grew up in that. I grew up in church with my mom, and I have an incredible stepfather and an incredible stepmother that I have been just extremely blessed to have. Growing up then, I was always, like I said, a big personality, but that wasn't always, I guess, received well. As I got older, I moved around a lot. I think I'd been to 6 primary schools.
And was part of that, you're growing up were you in different primary schools because you had to go or because you moved around or what?
A little bit of everything. The first two we'd moved, after that we'd moved again. But it's crazy because a lot of the moving was actually coming at paired with circumstantial that I was happy to move.
Right. Okay.
I had a great group of friends, but for me, I've always been on, I guess, the outside. I've always been half in, half out, in a sense that I wasn't necessarily bullied, but I wasn't necessarily accepted or one of, you know, the cool kids.
So did you find that difficult then as a kid growing up to be accepted for who you were?
Yeah, I think definitely. And that is something throughout my childhood, in moving schools, making friends, always struggled with kind of making friends and struggled to make genuine connections and long-term friends. And then anytime I kind of did, I was on the move and the process would start all over again. And I guess as well, for a lot of people, including myself, when you come from, you know, a split household, that level of acceptance between both sides is something that I think is a theme for me all throughout my life. And obviously I have a very big personality and I think it's been difficult through my childhood and then adulthood, always feeling like I have to maybe water it down and don't show it all, you know?
Yeah, and that big personality, is that your coping mechanism? Is that how it started or is that just your nature?
I don't even know. I think it's a bit of both. I think initially it started out as a coping mechanism of, well, if I'm just the funniest, I need to be the funniest person in the room. I need to be the loudest person in the room. Right. And when I hear people laugh, that means people like me and people accept me. You know, yeah. In primary and secondary school, I would have always been the class clown. And my teachers used to always say, she'd be great if she could just stop talking and just focus. You know, if she just stop talking and just focus. But here I am on the radio. So who's laughing now? And then I think it gradually became almost a window or a gateway of, well, this isn't necessarily me, but it is a version of me,
right,
that I can actually be as loud and as funny as I want to be because that other part that I'm creating, people are enjoying it. So I may as well just be that other loud, you know, boisterous version of myself, because what have I got to lose? Because people have bought into this other version, if that makes sense.
Was schooling in terms of academia, was that difficult for you, or, you know, were you a bright kid? Me, I was an average kid. Neither side of the fence. It was just like, you know, take me as I am. Yeah,
I wouldn't say it was necessarily bright. I liked school, but again, I think I wouldn't call myself an academic person by any means. I had been in loads of different primary schools. Then I went to a Christian-based school for 2 or 3 years, and I think that helped in a little way with that because there was focus on other things, like we had drama and we had other things outside of just the academia that was part of school life. But I had an incredibly difficult time fitting in there, which is ironic because you think, oh well, I struggled to fit in primary school, and then you go to the Christian school and it was just as difficult.
And what was the problem there then?
It was a Christian school that was tied in with a church, and everybody, I would say 95% of the people in that school attended that church.
Right.
And it was only me and maybe 4 or 5 other kids from my church then that attended. And it was very, I think, just clicky, because they were used to seeing each other on a Friday, used to seeing each other on a Sunday. All their parents are friends, they're spending time, and they're kind of, I suppose, built on a foundation that we didn't have. We only had seen them in school. So that was very, very, I really struggled there. Really, really struggled. So much that my mom will always say that the life just came out of me.
And was that secondary school or?
Secondary school level, And the life just totally, utterly came out of me. It was very, very traumatic, being honest with you. And for me, I think the people who are close to me start to panic when they see my light dimmer. you know,
yeah.
because I have such a big lie that when something's not right, people see it dull. And I think that's the first instance that they've seen that happen. So I was pulled out from there and went to Dundalk Grammar School. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me because, again, it wasn't just access to academia, but it was access to drama, to loads of arts, all that more of a creative flair I had mm-hmm. in me. I was really able to tap into that, and I felt like I was really celebrated in that school kind of for who I was. You know, it wasn't like sit and just read and do your okay. bits. It was like, oh, we'd love for you to be in this play, we'd love for you to be part of the events team. And that's kind of the places where I thrived in the people.
Okay.
Then the paper maybe is a better word. But I done well enough in the Leaving Cert. I always think if I had tried a little bit harder, I'd love to know what I would have got. But it was one of those things that on a Friday, you know, the last class, I always remember I had business and I would sit there and the only thing in my school bag was my makeup bag. And I would sit at the back of the class and do my makeup to head into town after school was finished on a Friday. And I remember my business teacher saying to me, "Why are you here?" But then I went and done a makeup course. So
okay,
everything people seen as a thorn was a blessing in the end.
So you never went on to university or college, as people would call it?
I did. I didn't get accepted to any of the colleges that I applied for.
Okay.
And I was like, oh no. And I went and done a VTAC level 5, which is kind of your backdoor way
yep.
in.
Yeah.
And this was for me a huge setback. All my friends had come from kind of very successful, wealthy backgrounds. Everybody was going off to college and to Trinity and DCU and off to do law. And it was like, okay, I have to go... it's awful, but at that time, not so much now, it's good, but back then it was looked down on as you kind of half made it, and it was like a taboo, you had to take the back doorway. But I adored it, and I think that year really matured me, and I wasn't 100% sure what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a guard initially.
Wow.
And I would have been the worst guard ever. I would have been a all right, sure, go on kind of guy. And
don't do it again.
Honestly, and what I knew was if you had a relevant degree, you would get paid more when you became a guard, you see. And they weren't recruiting that year. So that's why I did the additional year. Did the additional year in social care, adored it, and said, oh, I'm not going to go to the guards. I'm going to stick with the social care, which I'm glad because... especially now in comparison to then, which is what, 10, 15 years ago, guards were and police were respected a lot more. Whereas now, I would hate to be a guard in this day and age. It's a lot more difficult and crazy out there. So we went with social care, went to Waterford, got Waterford and done my 3 years in Waterford. And that was the beginning of that journey.
Faith Inspiring Radio. This is UCB Ireland.
Welcome back to the second part of today's Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. It is part of Meet the Team here at UCB Ireland, and my guest is Michaela Marrett.
Yeah.
Where was that? Where did that come from? You, the lone fan from Michaela in the corner. Michaela is, of course, our Homeward presenter, but she's much more than that. We'll discuss that in a few moments' time. We were talking, before we took the break there, we were talking about you wanting to be a guard. And then you moved from guard to social care. I suppose there's some kind of connection somewhere.
Well, the people, caring for the people. And if I didn't disqualify myself from being a guard, everything else did. At the time, there was a height restriction. I didn't meet that.
Right.
There was the Irish. I didn't meet that.
So it was kind of scuppered from the start, really, wasn't it?
I think I just knew I'd look good in a uniform, and that was just...
So listen. Talk to us about social care in terms of what? Was it just general social care or a specific kind of role?
It was general, and that's the thing with social care is how do you put a a lid on care. It kind of is extremely broad and covers everything, which was what worked for me. Okay. Because I wasn't 100% sure what vocation I wanted to take with it. It was really on a whim that I knew I didn't want to do the guards, and I was doing the social care. I was really enjoying it, and I was going to stick with it. So I went down to Waterford, didn't know a single person down there.
And what was down in Waterford?
My social care bachelor's degree.
Okay.
So it was 3 years I committed to.
Yeah.
Didn't even realise I'd gotten into Waterford, and it was like, hey, I've gotten into Waterford. And it was like looking at my parents and me like, I'm gonna have to go, like, God, who put that down there? So I went down and spent the first 2 weeks bawling my eyes out crying in a house by my own, because my two roommates, which were randomers I hadn't met, hadn't moved in yet. And being like, what am I doing here? Why am I here? I've made a bad decision.
How old were you?
19.
Okay.
And completely and just utterly on my own. And yeah, down in Waterford, a lot of the people who attend the college there have mutuals. You know, you have Kilkenny, Tipperary, Carlow.
Gotcha.
And like, it's a total different life down south. Like, you know, up on a sunny day here in Louth, you see people maybe getting an ice cream or whatever. But down south, where we lived in our apartments, you'd see all the lads out in the hurley jerseys, and they're throwing the hurls and the balls off the wall. Total different lifestyle, even though it's the same place, but very different. And settled in. After 2 weeks, I was going to elect to my lectures. Just going to the lecture, sitting in, listening to the lecture, packing my bag and walking straight out and walking back to my apartment to sit on my own, right? And people, when I tell people that, people are like, you, no, you're such a big personality, blah, blah, blah. And I think I just felt so scared and so insecure. And again, that feeling potentially of being in a new place and fearful of acceptance, and I'm going to have to make friends or I'm going to be alone here for the rest of my time. So 2 weeks in, I had this revelation. Because I seen everybody was making friends. And I said, if I leave it too late, people will have their groups, people will have their cliques, and it'll be 10 times harder to break it. So I made a commitment to myself, and I said, I am going to go in and I'm going to say hello to whoever's on the left, whoever's on the right of me, making, you know, a silly comment like, oh, this lecturer, oh, what a head wrecker, you know. And if whether people will either snub me or I'll engage with people, and that's all I need to do. So that's what I did for the first week. And these two girls took pity on me, and they said, oh, we're going for some lunch after college if you want to join. And I said, yeah, okay, I'll join. And at that time, I had this thing that I was in a blazer phase, right? I would just wear,
okay,
I had 20 blazers, right? So I'd wear blazers every day. So they took me to lunch, and they were lovely girls, and it just totally opened up my personality, that I was chatting away, having like the great chats with them. And it's so funny because we became best friends with those two girls, and I lived with them for the 3 years, four years we ended up doing that we were together, one from Kerry and one from Tipperary. But the funny thing is, they always look back and they say, Michaela, we actually did, like, they admitted it, we were taking pity on you and said, oh, we'll just invite this poor girl.
Blazer woman.
Yeah.
Blazer girl.
And I'll never forget, at the lunch, they said, oh, fair play to you for being a mature student, right? And I was like, I'm not a mature student, I'm 19. And they were like, oh, what's with the blazers then, right? Because I was wearing the blazers, they thought I was a mature student. But yeah, it was one of those things that I just had to push myself. And it was absolutely a God thing, because I'd said hello to loads of people that week, and it felt like nobody was biting. And I think I was really reaching that kind of a cusp moment of it's make or break here, because I can't stay here alone and be bawling my eyes out. And I met those girls. Week later, I was voted as class president, and it was just a complete another 180 turnaround. So did the 4 years there, did the social care. What I loved about it was that you can ebb and flow. A lot, like if you're an accountant, you're an accountant and it's numbers, and you're always going to look at numbers. The numbers might change, but it's always going to be numbers.
Yeah.
Whereas with social care, if you want to spend the first 4 years of your career maybe looking after people with intellectual disability, and then you say, hey, I want to change your pace, you can go and spend 4 years, you know, looking after people who are in, you know, old resident care. If you want to change your pace, you can go and work for in brain recovery facility. If you want to change your pace, you can go and work for home care. You can go and work in homelessness and addiction. Like, there's so much ebbing and flowing in it that, for me, I love that, being able to kind of change. And if you get, not bored necessarily, but if you're maybe not getting as much satisfaction, it's very easy to just make a quick left, make a quick right. And if you love it, you enjoy it, you can change back. But of course, the biggest part is the aspect of having the honour, more importantly than anything, of being able to inject a little bit of care, joy and love into an individual's life. It's vulnerable people, really.
Right, yeah.
Is I guess the umbrella of it, is just anyone who's vulnerable. And that's a real honour, to be invited into people's homes and people's lives, and to be given a say and given the opportunity to guide them and you know, navigate them and support them in their lives. And that was one of the biggest joys for me in it. I've done homelessness and addiction was what I went into, because I don't like an easy life. And it was extremely, extremely difficult, but brought me so much joy and so much satisfaction. You know, it's very difficult when you are dealing with people with addiction, because if you, say, have somebody and you're physically taking care of them, you can see an improvement there and you know you're taking care of them. Whereas you could set somebody up with a counselling session for the next day, mm-hmm. and you can set them up for a viewing for an apartment. But if they go out and they use again, then every day you're starting back at ground zero with them and having to support them, you know. And that takes a lot of, I guess, a lot of self-motivation and to show up for somebody time and time again, no matter what circumstances, and to be like, okay, we're just going to get back on it. A lot of resilience, I think, for them and for you as well. So it was great, very difficult watching, like, a couple of people, I remember being 20 on work experience and walking in and saying goodnight to one guy, and he had a court hearing the next day, and his wife had just committed suicide 2 weeks beforehand. He was going to court to get access to his children, and that morning you had to be out of bed by 10 o'clock. Came up, knocked the door, overdosed, went in, foamed at the mouth, overdosed, and died in the ambulance on the way. And the kids went into care because obviously he passed away, but he missed the thing. And at 20 years old, you know, that is a huge,
that must be a huge shock.
Yeah, a huge thing. And that's one of probably, I would say, 10 overdoses or suicides that me, before I was 24, between the age of 20 and 24, had walked in on. And it's exceptionally difficult when you're a Christian as well, because there is barriers in place when you work in a care environment. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to know what people need, at the core, what they need. And it's Jesus, and not being able to share that. To be, don't get me wrong, there's loopholes and there's ways.
Sure.
But to know what people really need and not kind of being able to facilitate that is a very difficult thing. A very, very difficult thing. And I guess always that question of why, you know, comes up when you see people who are suffering and people who are just having awful backgrounds, awful childhoods, awful circumstances, and seeing them being judged by the world and just getting a really bad hand at life, you know. But it's, again, as a person, it has hugely shaped me in my, I guess, outlook on people, my compassion for people and understanding of people. And I guess it's made me quite well-rounded in that. And I stepped out of it towards the end because I was actually finding myself becoming desensitized to it. And I think that scared me. We'd had an incident where, again, someone had created a suicide, had committed suicide, pardon me. And, you know, you have this kind of an aftercare, and they were saying, are you okay? And I didn't cry. I wasn't upset. And that scared me because I was going, there's something in me that is getting used to this. Mm. And I don't feel like this is something I want to get used to. I'm losing my empathy for it because it's just becoming the norm. And slowly but surely, I said, OK, I think I need to either head in a different direction or I need to look at something else. I was starting to burn out, really, more than anything. I was just starting to burn out. The organisation I was working for weren't very supportive. You know, if something happened, it was, you know, the way if you're a waitress, the customer's always right. Very much like that, you know. And when you have vulnerable people, those vulnerable people sometimes will do anything when they have an addiction to facilitate it, and sometimes that can be abusing the service and abusing the people like us who are the care workers in order to manipulate. And it was very difficult when you're trying to help somebody, and if you left your phone out near them, it'd be gone, you know. Being like, okay, I'm trying to help you here, yeah, and you're robbing me phone while I'm trying to, you know. And the organisation's policy would be that we'd have to apologise to them for leaving our phone out and for tempting them in a way, which I guess it is valid in a sense, you know. It's not nice, but it's a very hard environment to keep pushing, because that's what you're constantly doing. You're pushing to show up for people, pushing them to give them the best, and that is something that is one of the main takeaways, and I guess it's just brought major compassion and resilience into my life.
UCB Ireland, serving the church, reaching the nation.
It's Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. It's Meet the Team, and Michaela Merritt is our guest today. We've been hearing, Michaela, just about your work as a carer, as a social, just the difficulties that you've had to go through, the suicides that you've had to be witnessing, and how it desensitized you, or you felt that it was getting that way. Mm-hmm. You were getting to a place where it was like, it's not affecting me anymore. I got to get out. Before we investigate that a little bit further, I want to talk about your life as a Christian. Mm-hmm. Because right at the very beginning, you said it was you and your mom, mm-hmm, and you were Christians. So when when did you decide that you wanted to be a Christian? What was that like?
I just grew up, and I just always loved church, but I wouldn't say that I had been at the place where I comprehended and loved Christ and had a personal relationship with him. I had a relationship with my church. And I loved that. I loved being a church, but I don't think what I was hearing when I was there was a realness for me, really, until I was about maybe 11 years old. And I remember my mom and my stepdad being at my bedside, and I don't 100% remember, but I think I'd been asking some kind of questions. And of course, Christian parents being Christian parents, they were leading me into it too, you know.
As you do.
Yeah. And my mom said, well, would you like to give your life to Christ? And I said, yeah, I think I would. And they prayed with me, and I gave my life to Christ. And it wasn't like this earth-shattering, you know, heaven's opening moment where I woke up the next day, like, you know, a Duracell bunny and said, woohoo, I've given my life to Christ.
Yeah.
But it was, I remember, even though I was so young, I remember that pivotal moment of being like, yeah, I know there's more here of what I've been part of so far, and mm-hmm, I want to tap into that and experience it. Growing up then from probably 11 to 18, I loved being a Christian, and I think I found a wonderful balance again of being myself and not having to feel like I need to be something else for people or need to be something else, you know, to be that kind of Christian person. You know, I was very happy being a joker, but all my friends knew I was a Christian, and everybody, like, I would talk about youth group and I would invite them to youth group, and if I had a sleepover on a Saturday, my friends probably hated it because the condition was they'd come to church on a Sunday morning. Wow. With us, you know.
This is a great idea. Great idea.
That was always the condition. Yeah. So for me, I just knew that I loved God, and I was never ashamed of him. And I think because I was so bold in it, I wasn't kind of made fun for it. I never had any negative impact from that as a teenager. If anything, people were just always curious, and I think they knew and seen Christ in me because I was very happy, very bubbly, very compassionate, very considerate person. And I think those traits that they seen in me, people knew there was something different. When I went to college, it was the same. I joined Christian Union there, met with some amazing people in Christian Union. Everybody in college knew that I was a Christian as well. I think for me, what happened was I'd had a couple of bad relationships, and two of them had been with two Christian guys. Mm. And they really didn't go well. Really, really didn't go well. And I believed the lie of, well, some of my friends are dating guys who aren't Christians, and they seem to have it 10 times better than me.
Okay.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And you know, that I guess I had been taught that impossible standard of, oh well, if you're with a Christian, Christians are perfect and you'll be treated well, and there's nothing, you know, that could possibly go wrong. And then I was in this confused state of looking and going, oh well, if I'm a Christian and I'm following God and I'm doing things his way, how come everybody outside of here seems to be having it way sweeter than I do? And I don't think I had ever come across that kind of, I guess, a hardship in my life where it made me question my faith, where I was going, hold on a minute, if God's so good and all his promises for me, how come I feel this way in a negative sense, you know?
I was going to ask you that. Did it rock your faith?
Yeah.
Did it change who you were?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I allowed myself to, I guess, very much, if I'm being honest, to have a lack of faith of, well, he can't be that good because obviously look at where I am.
Right.
And I'm dating his people, I'm in his church, and how come this is happening to me, this is happening to me, this is happening to me? And if God's supposed to have a hand on my life, this shouldn't be happening. So much that then I'd gotten into a relationship with a gentleman who wasn't a Christian because I believed again a lie of, well, it can't get much worse, can it? I was wrong.
Okay.
That was an extremely bad relationship, and that person was being unfaithful to me, with co-workers and all stuff like that. And I remember coming out of that relationship so broken, truly just broken-hearted and broken-spirited as well. And I felt so much shame and so much embarrassment of knowing what I needed and saying, I know I have to come back to Christ. I have to come back. I know, because I've tried everything else. I thought he wasn't doing enough before, but I've tried everything else. And there's a very common saying that my worst day with Christ is still better than my best day without him.
Yeah.
And I think that's where I was at. I was like, listen, I know it wasn't good. It wasn't amazing when I was walking with Christ, but oh my goodness, it was so much better than where I'm at now. Because I thought I can't get much worse without him, because I don't feel that impact of what I believe of mm-hmm. what I'm supposed to feel when I'm with him. And to be totally honest with you, what happened was, I think it was my 24th birthday, and I was really in the pit. Like, I was in the lowest of the lowest. And I ended up having what I would have considered an almost overdose. It was my birthday. I'd been up all night. And it was one of those things that I was constantly just trying to fight that feeling of shame, that feeling of abandonment, that feeling of disappointment. So I would try to keep things going, because when it stopped, then it would all come flooding back. It's a constant cycle, isn't it?
You got to keep feeding it to stop it. Yeah,
exactly. And I had leaned into alcohol and leaned into drugs to just, I guess, as a medicine for pain, so I could just sleep at night and not think about the horrible things that happened to me and how I felt about myself. And I remember trying to take drugs, and I physically couldn't. Every time I tried, I would throw up. I was like, what is going on here? I would throw up and throw up and throw up. And eventually I just stopped, because I was like, oh, here, this is awful. Like, I'm trying to have a great time here and I can't stop vomiting.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting on the floor of the bathroom and going, how have I got here? How have I got here? And just being like, how did I fall so fast? And it's like I had blinders on and couldn't see it. It was like a little bit, a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. And I was still going to church here and there and still believed in it, but wasn't 100% in it. And then it was like, almost like, you know, you see in the movies when people are looking at their hands and they raise their hands and they're looking at their hands going, yeah. It was like, how have I gotten here? The next day, woke up and I knew that God had saved my life, because I am convinced that I would have overdosed. And the reason every time I tried to take, I was throwing up, was so that I couldn't ingest it, because it had been an obscene amount, being honest with you, that I believe I would have been dead, or I would have overdosed. And I think God, that was God's hands in my life, just protecting me from that. And I recognised it immediately the next day, I knew. And I said, okay, that's it. I said, this is it. And I kind of had this realization that I was like, I don't care what church people think. I don't care what people are going to think. I don't think people think, oh, look what the cat dragged in. These were all fears that I had. Don't care what people have to say about me. I know that I need Christ, and I know that I need a relationship with him, and it's worth pursuing it with him than all these other fears and all these other concerns that I have. A week later, I seen that St. Mark's Chapel was having a sisterhood weekend, and it was something in my spirit that went, I have to go. I have to go. And I would usually flee from stuff like that. I said, I have to go. And I drove there. It was in Wicklow, and I sat in my car for an hour outside, because it was like my feet wouldn't move. And I was like, I have to, I know I need to be here. And I sat, and I remember putting the car into reverse and saying, I'm just going to drive home. I don't care. I can't do it. And something, I don't know why, just came over me, and I said, no, I have to, I know I need to be here. So I went in, had an amazing weekend, and I spent the whole weekend, the girls probably looking at me going, is she all right? I spent the three days that I was there on my hands and knees, just bawling, crying, and just crying out to God and asking him to just heal my heart and heal the insecurity and heal the pain and to just take it away from me. And from that weekend on, that was it for me. I was 100% back in, 100% bought in, and was just on fire for Christ. And I was like, from what I've been through, I will do anything I can to serve him. And I think the reason I couldn't get out of that car was because I knew this was the moment. This was where I was going to have to face it, and I was going to have to bear it all, because there was no way I was going to go and spend this weekend and act a bit holy and just have a nice time. I was like, this is it. This is going to be it, because once I do this, and I went into the first worship session and the song started maybe two sentences, and immediately my eyes started bawling crying. I mean, hysterical crying. And it's because I was so ready to surrender. Yeah. That's the word for it. I was so ready to surrender. And I knew...
I can see you getting emotional.
Yeah,
now.
And I knew that was the moment. And it truly, truly was. And there was a song that's very popular that they played that weekend, and it was like, it was just made for me. It's my anthem. It's my personal anthem. I can't play it when I'm driving, because I'll be crying and I'll crash the car. It's banned from my driving list.
Yeah.
And I can't think of who the original singer is. I think it is, I can't even remember, but it's Defender.
Right.
And the lyrics are, you picked up all my pieces, put me back together. You are the defender of my heart. When I thought I lost you, you know where I left you. You reintroduced me to your love. You picked up all my pieces, put me back together. You are the defender of my heart. And as they do for conferences, they kind of picked four songs, and those were the songs for the weekend. But it was that, I'd never heard it before. And it was like it had been handwritten for me, and was the prayer and the song of my heart. And has been ever since. Anytime that creeps up, I'm like, oh, I know what I need. And God just totally... I don't even know what the word for it is, totally rejuvenated and restored all of the loss, all of the pain and all of the hurt that I had been through. And because I knew how heavy the burden I was carrying before, I will never forget how light I felt after I gave it to him. And I knew that he was real, and I knew that he was there. And that was where I just knew that I was going to spend the rest of my life serving him and dedicating him and honouring him for what he'd done in my life and to tell others about it.
UCB Ireland, serving the church, reaching the nation.
So welcome to the final part of this week's Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. It's been phenomenal to hear Michaela's story. This is all part of Meet the Team at UCB Ireland and a real honest account of how you came back to Christ. We've just been hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And even now you're still quite, there's emotion running in you even now.
Yeah. But we all know I'm an emotional person.
I want to say this, ever since you joined UCB, you've brought a freshness, you've brought a fun, you've brought a kind of a can-do attitude that goes, I'm going out there, that's what's going to happen. And when you were interviewed for the role, it was clear that you were so right for the job, so right to come and be part of the team. But I love the fact that you're more than a radio presenter. There's so much more to you within us than just being a radio presenter. And I don't mean that wrongly, because that's what we do, but what you bring to the table. I'm going to ask you an odd question. Why did you join UCB?
Well, nowhere else was hired. No.
Yeah, couldn't get a job. Or needed to buy a car.
After I'd stepped out from social care, I knew, and this was very timely with when I had kind of come back to Christ and rededicated my life to him. I knew that there was more. So I spent a year and went to Germany to seminary school.
Yeah, we interviewed you. You were in Germany.
Yes, yeah. And that year was an incredible year for me. And again, like I talked about, I felt a lot of anxiety and fear of rejection and abandonment from my childhood, from my experience in my relationships, and from my, as well, misjudgments on Christ's love too. And I guess I'd always had what I like to call and tell people is an anxious attachment with my relationship with God. If I don't do enough of this,
okay,
then he will leave me.
All right.
If I'm not reading my Bible enough, then I'm not good enough.
So in some ways it was done on deeds rather than
sacrificial
love.
Absolutely. It was a total anxious attachment of I have to do this in order and be this in order to get what I'm supposed to get from you, mm-hmm. which is love. And when I went to Germany, I met mad people there. And if you're not familiar, German culture is extremely rigid.
Yeah.
They follow all the rules. Yeah. Everything has its place. And I'm the exact opposite of that. And they always say the school was called ETS. And there was always a saying for the year that I was there. And they said, we don't know how much Michaela needs ETS, but we know how much ETS needs Michaela.
Wow.
So when I was there, I had this total, because they involved me in everything, mad stuff, stuff that I would have always said no to. Stuff that I would have said, no, I can't do that, I'm too scared. So I think it really nurtured this boldness that I was now beginning to step into of, I don't care what people think of me, I don't care what's going to happen. And I guess shedding the shackles of that anxiety and fear that had major control over my life. So then towards the end of the year, obviously I'm having this boldness and stepping in and giving everything a try for the whole year. And I see on Facebook, UCB Ireland's hiring. And I kind of went, so, I don't know. I'd love to say that, you know, there was this whole like, oh my gosh, that's definitely my calling moment. But to be real, that it wasn't. There was just something that went, ooh, I think that would be an amazing job.
Mm.
I love to talk.
No, the true.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think one thing that I, for a lot of people, see as a perk in a job like this is it's a wonderful thing to be able to take faith, your faith personal life, and put that together with your work life. Because in my previous work life, that was a struggle.
Sure.
Because you're caring for people, you're connecting with people, you're engaging people, but there's this huge part of my life that I can't share.
Mm.
This huge part of my life that has no influence on my day-to-day of what I'm doing. It's locked in a box, you know?
Yep.
Whereas here, it's a beautiful marriage between the two and being able to engage with people, but engage with them for on the pyramid is the first thing I want to talk about, is when I get to talk about the most here, which is Jesus, you
Amen.
Know?
Yep.
And I said, oh, but I've no qualifications at all. And I think that's that fear thing again of he doesn't, what is it that they say? He doesn't call the qualified, he qualifies the called.
Yeah, he equips the called.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, do you know what? I'm just going to send it in. Why not? I'm just crazy, Mo. Why not? And I remember we had to do the demo reel. And I'm watching 20 YouTube videos on how do you do it? What's it? First of all, what's a demo reel? And how do you do it? And recording it and in the room and sending it off and just being like, oh, I'm probably not going to hear anything. And I guess, again, there's always that insecurity of there's probably people who are way holier, way better, way more qualified than me. Did the interview with you guys. And I thought it didn't go well. I was like, right, that they're just being nice, you know. And then I think you guys called me a day or two later. Don't blame yous now. And you said we'd like to offer you the job. And it's so crazy because I was still in Germany when you think about
you
it.
Were.
And I said, I'll be back in 3 weeks. And you said, perfect, you'll start in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And here I am. So I guess why I wanted to work there was that I knew there was something special about what was happening here. And I knew there was something special beginning in me that I would be able to bring to it. I'd grown up on Word for Today. I'd listened to UCB Ireland as well. That I knew this was a unique ministry that would maybe be the perfect fit for a unique person like me more than anything.
We've certainly seen that in the last 2 years. You know what? This is going to sound crazy, but time is going to be our enemy here, and we're going to run out mm-hmm. of time because there's so much that I would want to, you know, delve into and mm-hmm. investigate here. But I want to jump from us for a moment mm-hmm. because things took a massive change for you, relationship-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember the day you were sitting by your desk when you were telling me what was going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
And you're now married.
I am. I know.
And he's a great guy.
Yes. Yeah. And I have the most incredible husband in the world. I know I'm biased because everyone says that. But it's so funny because I pursued Dan. Dan wasn't interested. Dan took my number and never texted me. And I said, he obviously loves himself. I'm not interested. And when we backtrack our timelines lined up perfectly. That weekend that I was with those girls,
yes.
he was at the men's one.
Oh, really?
And he was doing the exact same thing I was.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
I went to Germany and all of a sudden, I think he panicked because I wasn't readily available anymore because I moved country. He was the one who encouraged me because we were FaceTiming at that time and was I was like, oh, there's this job, I'm not sure. He was like, go for it, send it in. He's always been my
he encouraged you to apply to
yes,
us.
Yes, he did, yeah. He's always been my number one encourager. Saturday, everybody was laughing at us because both of us have started going to Zumba. Dan's the only man there. People were saying, oh, fair play to him. Da, da, da. And I said, well, actually, I wanted to come and I was scared to come. And Dan went to two first and then said, you're going to love it. And we've gone together. He doesn't care that he's the only man there. And that just shows that he is just the best in the world and my number one supporter. Absolutely. 100%.
He is an incredible guy. And he's also an official volunteer for UCB mm-hmm. Ireland. And we're so grateful to him. But you both got involved with youth at church.
Yes, yeah.
So you're now the church youth leader.
Yes.
What age group?
12 to 18.
Okay, now that's a difficult time because you were, going back to our earlier part of the conversation, you were flying high as a Christian, 12
mm-hmm.
to 18.
Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing that, what you were at the moment with the youth that you deal with, or is it very different now?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's different because our youth are facing every year. It's like things that people are being exposed to and challenged by gets 2 years younger, you know.
Right.
And when I was in school, a lot of us left and left with pretty clean slates, you know. And
yeah,
that
fairly naive.
Even my friends who weren't Christians were very, very, very naive.
Yeah.
Very naive. Like nobody smoked, nobody had done drugs. Like even we'd had maybe a couple of drinks for our 18th birthday, you know.
Gotcha.
Whereas now
it's
like 14. you know, vapes and stuff like that. Sure. And I'm laughing because I'm going, as a youth leader, I've had to confiscate a few vapes, you know.
Wow.
And I'm going, I never would have foresaw this, because when I was in youth, I wouldn't have dared.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't exist, first of all. But second of all, I wouldn't have dared. But in a way, from what I gather from our group, it is more difficult because there's a lot more out there.
I think there's a lot more pressure on our youth today.
Yeah. A lot more pressure. And not only that, but it has a lot more glitter, I think, shook over it. That it's actually a lot more appealing because you have money.
Yeah.
You can get money.
Yeah.
You can get love.
Yeah.
You can get all these things. And it looks 10 times shinier than it used to. It does look like it's the key.
Yes, of course it does.
More, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But on the opposite side of that, our youth... people are very quickly, because they're because they're coming across it earlier, are very quickly discovering that it's not the answer, quicker than before.
Okay.
And because our youth have the answer, it's like, so I think it's the same for me, that their friends aren't putting them down. They're going, oh, well there must be something different there, that because I'm 16, and by 16 now you've tried it all.
Yeah.
You know, not 2021.
Yeah.
That they're going, okay, well there's something more here. And I think the world is a lot more broken than not that it's always been broken, but people are a lot more being broken a lot more sooner, that they're searching that element of love, searching, finding the wrong things and then searching for the right thing is happening a lot quicker, that they are discovering a lot more, if that makes sense. So I think it works on a two part. It's a lot more difficult out there, but I think our youth are thriving because people are noticing out of their difficulty the difference, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. That leads me into, I suppose, a final part or final question, really, or a final comment. I want to talk about the open space here in UCB Ireland. It's always been my desire. We talk about serving the church, reaching the nation. There is a generation that we need to reach.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the generation of a youth generation.
Yeah.
We have to. And from day one, when we came here, myself and my wife, to run the ministry, it has always been my desire to run a youth service, to do something that is youth driven, youth appropriate, youth sounding, everything to do with youth. And the reason I didn't do it is because I'm too old.
Mm-hmm.
But you've grabbed it and you've run with it.
Mm-hmm.
The open space. And I know it takes a lot of time for preparation. And I know our plans are huge for what this will do.
Mm-hmm.
How are you finding it?
You know, like you said, I'm just running with it. And I think there's just that. I know that it's needed, that I am happy to just run with it. Because I don't want to wait another moment trying to perfect something that people need when they can have it right now. And that's when they need it. They need it now, not later. It's been a joy. It's been a challenge. It's one of those things that you're going, I don't even know if people, you know, like this or are even listening to this. But I'm confident that what we are putting out there for the open space is that it's something you can listen to and feel community if you don't have it. It's something you can listen to and maybe not hear what you'll hear from, you know, your own youth leaders or from the pulpit on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I'm very straightforward, and you know, the only thing I'll ever shame is the devil. So the thing is people can and hear just that. That's just that real talk. And when I was, you know, a youth, we didn't have that. We did, but we didn't, you know? And that is what this generation is craving more than ever, is authenticity, complete and utter authenticity and vulnerability to be like, hey, if someone had turned around to me and said, hey, life is actually still, you know, tough when you're a Christian and it's not all sugar sweet, but it's better with him.
Yeah.
And here's how he's shown up in the real moments in my life. I think that would have grounded me a lot more and prepared me a lot more, you know, for life. And that's what we're trying to do with this open space is to educate, equip, and as well create community for them, to give them music that they love, music that they listen to, instead of trying to, you know, powerhouse them to just absolutely, you know, love Brian Houston or adore just because you should, because it's Christian.
Adore Hillsong or
and
whatever,
you're a Christian.
Or anybody else in that bracket.
Yeah, and also it helps them evangelistic wise, because they can say, oh, if your friends love, I don't know, Drake or who, I don't know who else, Nicki Minaj, here's actually an artist that sounds exactly like them, and you have to be sneaky, I think, when you're a teenager. And when I was a teenager, I'd you'd slip in a couple of Christian songs and your friends won't notice and they'd be like, oh, who's that?
Yeah.
And it sounds silly, but it actually is a really effective, practical, easy method of evangelism for their friends, but also an alternative for them. And that's the thing. You have you know, you have nightclubs are open all weekend, you have bookies that are open all day, and you have pubs that are open all day. And what I want to have the open space is where that is open all day and it's full access and it's readily available for them. That if you want the alternative, it will always be there for you. And it will always be available. That if you want Christian music that you know you're going to like, that is like the music the world has, but this is what you can listen to.
Got a message of hope in it.
Exactly, with the message of hope in it. That you can, if you say, hey, I'm feeling lonely and I feel like I'm the only one who's going through this, you can listen to the open space and hear somebody else who's going through it and be encouraged by that too. And to just connect the youth and the young adults of Ireland through the medium of radio, because I believe that it can, and that is what our mission is going to be going forward with the open space.
It's phenomenal to actually sit down for an hour and listen to you, Michaela. Thank you so much for taking the time to be part of Focus on Friday and meet the team. You can listen to Michaela Monday to Friday here on UCB Ireland 4 till 7, and you can hear her on the open space 8 p.m. on a Tuesday night, repeated at 2 p.m. on a Saturday. And you can always email her, michaela@ucbradio.ie. If her story has touched you and encouraged you, please get in touch. I just want to say this. It is a privilege and an honour to work with honest people who have a real heart for God. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you.
God bless you.
Thanks.